Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Welcome to Believe in Vikings. I am your host, Dustin Baker. I'm here with B-Mac, Brian McKinney, who played for the Minnesota Vikings for about one decade. We're here with Sally from Minneapolis, Ron from Eden Prairie, and our special guest tonight is John Krasinski from The Athletic. He covers the Vikings, and what a perfect week to have that gentleman on to go over all of the influx matters. It's arguably the most momentous, change-oriented week for the Vikings, I'd say, in 15 years. So we'll dig into that. GM, quarterback, coach, all of that. That's what we got on the agenda. First, we're going to pay homage to our sponsor, who's betonline.ag. And they would like to wish you a happy new betting year as they continue their march to the playoffs and beyond. BetOnline remains the number one spot for all the best sports wagering action in 2022. New year and a new updated desktop and mobile website design. Go over there and sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use this code, B-L-E-A-V, just like in the name of our show, Believe, to get things started from football, basketball, hockey, boxing, UFC, right to your favorite Vegas casino games. Don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available in 2022. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to wager on all of your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts. John, welcome to the show tonight. How are you, good sir?
Doing great, Dustin, man. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to do this.
Likewise, it's good to finally connect with you. So in the off chance that our listeners aren't familiar with your work, you work for The Athletic, correct?
That's right. I cover the Vikings and the Timberwolves for The Athletic. Been there for almost 4 years now.
Okay, wonderful. And how long have you been in the Minneapolis media market?
Since 2001, right out of school, 2001. So I've been here a while now, 20 years. It's kind of crazy to say I've been doing anything for 20 years, but here I am.
And per usual, we have Brian McKinney on the panel tonight. And you remember him. You know him, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, from back in the day. Brian was one of my favorites. I always tell this story when, you know, my friends would always ask me about what it's like to cover the Vikings, be around these dudes and stuff. And I was, you know, it was always great. But the story I always tell about McKinney is like back in the Metrodome, when in the preseason, you remember, Brian, like in the preseason, you have so many more players on the team. And so you have these rows of lockers in the middle of this of what was already a small locker room. So there was nowhere to move anywhere at all. And, you know, I'm a little guy. I'm 5'7", 155 pounds. And Brian obviously is a huge guy. And so I was kind of maneuvering through the locker room, trying to just get to guys to talk to and interview. Big Mac is just like, he just gotten undressed and showered and stuff. And he was getting ready to kind of get out the door. And he was just trying to squeeze by all of us and step over pads and stuff. And I swear to you, barely touched me. And I like got tossed across the room. Like it was like, you know, I mean, it was just a graze of his arm, but he's, you know, he is a big, big dude and I am not a big dude. And he gave me a little bit of a ride. So it was a good time.
Now you know how D lineman felt.
My bad.
No, absolutely. I was just like, I cannot imagine trying to get around this dude to get to the quarterback. So
Brian, when you and I first started the show in August of 2020, I know the ESPN radio guy here in my hometown of Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and I told him, I was like, they just reached out to me and they said I could do a show with Brian McKinney. And what he said is, he's like, do you have any idea how big of a human being that is? And I was like, no, I've watched him. I grew up cheering for him. He's like, no, in person, the guy is like humongous.
Yeah. You've got a reputation to that, Bryant. You know, your counterpart, Phil Loadholt. You know, I ran into him at Eden Prairie Lifetime here a few times, and so I know. I don't know which one of you is actually bigger, but that's the biggest comparison I have. And I'm also 5'7" on a good day, but a little more than 155. But we'll leave it at that. And yeah, it was it's very harrowing looking at a human that size, and
hey, Sally.
makes me feel better about flying though, like, you know, and sitting in coach or something.
That's right. That's what I always say.
Oh, yeah,
it's a big man's world, except for when you get on a plane, you know, and then we got all the leg room.
We're running the show, man.
Well, remember the Vikings made Bryant fly in coach when he flew here on draft day.
Brutal.
Yeah. Right. All right, Sally, we had humongous news, and I'll argue the biggest, I guess, wave of change for the Minnesota Vikings in probably, arguably 15, 16 years. And to the surprise of some of us, maybe not you, Rick Spielman was terminated, almost like the first line of business, at least the way it was reported in my interpretation. And I think of the group here, I'm not sure about John, I think you're the most vocal that it was time to go move on from Spielman. So yes. A, were you surprised? And B, are you excited for the future?
Oh my gosh. I don't even think it has sank in yet. That's how surprised I am about it. So the Vikings actually reached out to me and asked me to be a guest of theirs to the game on Sunday, which was obviously like, what? You guys want me to be your guest? Okay. So I obviously had a great time on Sunday. Plus the game ended up being really fun. And so I stayed up a little late. And when I woke up at like 10:30, 11, everything had already hit the fan.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a lot to take in all at once. And I am really surprised. I've never been a big fan of Rick Spielman, rather than that couple year stretch right after Zimmer got here. As far as drafting goes, I personally wanted to go after messing up the Christian Ponder pick back in the day. So I've said this whole time, all I want is fresh eyes looking at this thing. And I don't want Rick Spielman figuring out these major moves. So I'm happy, but I'm feeling very apprehensive right now about what's going to happen.
Well, it's change. And so it comes with a whole new seatbelt. You have to learn all that. So John, here's the deal. We're going to go through the big stuff, the GM, the coach, the quarterback over the next 40 minutes or so. And if you're able, I want you to offer kind of your predictions. And I always get confused with some of the gentlemen like yourself who've worked in the market for 20 years. I don't know if you like these teams or not. So if you have a personal preference, you can throw that in there too. But based on the general manager, do you have like a way that you're leaning at what they're looking for, a type or an age, or what do you got?
Yeah, you know, like it's a lot of times when these things happen, I feel like as a reporter, I kind of have a good idea of how the process is going to work. But this is a unique one because Rick Spielman was there for 16 years. They have not, the Will family has not done a search for a president of football operations, of a GM, whatever you want to call him, for a very long time. And so it's a little bit hard to get a read on exactly what they're going to be looking for in terms of, you know, do they want a young guy, kind of an innovator, that kind? Do they want someone who's been in it before and has a lot of experience as a GM and can kind of just come in and hit the ground running right away that way? So like in talking to people who kind of are on the periphery of the search and trying to figure that out as well, it seems like they're going to cast a super wide net. So they're going to look at all sorts of different types of options, you know, and then try and come, you know, whittle it down over a little bit of time. I don't think it's going to happen right away. You know, I don't think this is going to be a super fast search. That's going to take a little time for them to do their interviews, to do their due diligence and things like that. I, you know, personally, whenever these things come up, I always try to look at who out there is doing a great job. And to me, who's got the best roster in the league right now? I think the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have the best roster in the league. And so I would go, you know, after someone on that staff underneath Jason Light and see if there's some interest there. That would be my preference is, you know, you look at the way they've drafted, the way they've signed free agents, not just Tom Brady, but mm-hmm. but all over the field, and built such a strong roster. I mean, that would be somebody high on their list. I also know that they had a lot of reservations with how the communication kind of broke down as in later on in the Spielman Zimmer era. So they might look for someone who is kind of outgoing that way, maybe a Lewis Riddick for ESPN or somebody like that, who's kind of, you know, really a good communicator and understands kind of the politics of the position as well as, you know, the talent evaluation. So I think there's going to be, you know, a lot of people that they go after and go look at. But, you know, I would start at the top of those teams that are just stacked with talent and try and find someone that can really do a good job drafting and try and bring some more talent in, because I think they need a lot of help in a lot of areas.
I think,
John, I do have a quick question, you know, and I'm going to parallel off of your expertise covering the Timberwolves, because their ownership wise, they seem to be very different as far as how the Wilfs operate versus how Glenn Taylor has, where Taylor obviously is courtside right there. Mm-hmm. He's very much involved with day to day on the team, whereas the Wilfs, they haven't had that guy, you know, other than Spielman, to be kind of the eyes and ears in Minnesota while they're here. Are there benefits of kind of doing it that way? I know now football and basketball are going to be two different animals to deal with anyways, but as far as the ownership standpoint, is there a benefit of having it be where they are a little distant and then they can look at it more from just an operational standpoint?
Yeah, I mean, I do think the one thing that they have going for them in their approach and talking to agents of candidates and kind of people who would have interest in this position is the Vikings are a desirable destination right now for a lot of top candidates, both for GM and head coach, because not just because they have some talent on the field and things like that, but the Wilf family has already established itself as one that's not going to get in the middle of things, not going to meddle, not going to say, no, I want you to draft this player. No, we need to trade for this player. It's whoever they're going to hire, they're going to give them a lot of resources and spend a ton of money. And then B, they are going to just say, okay, we've hired you. We're going to trust you to do the job and we're going to give you a long time to do it. It's rare in this league for an executive to be with the team for 16 years. It's rare for a head coach to get 8 years when you've only won two playoff games. So, you know, the patience that they have, and you never have to worry about them being in the headlines. They're not Jerry Jones, you know, getting quoted after every game. They're not Dan Snyder messing around and being embarrassments off the field. They are very quiet, very supportive owners. And so that makes this a super attractive job on top of the practice facility is unbelievable. The stadium is great. Like there's a lot of things that they have going for them and maybe a division that might not have Aaron Rodgers next year. That's pretty good too. So I just think that when you look at all of the available openings out there, the Vikings have to be right near the top of the list. And so they should be able to get a lot of the interviews with people they want and have very few people saying, nah, that's not a position for me right now.
On the, so for the listeners, I want to point out that you heard it from John that patience will be a virtue. You'll have to make sure your Twitter thumbs are patient, because if it's going to take a couple weeks and you see these other teams getting dudes that you wanted, it's going to take a while because they don't do this very often and they want to, you know, be thorough and get it right. Bryant, when you were drafted and whatnot, the Vikings kind of, in that era, had a weird general manager setup. They had Jeff Diamond for a while. And then I think Brzezinski was there for vice president of football operations. But do you, as a player, did you care who the general manager was? And how often would you see the dude?
Brzezinski, I've seen him a lot. And when Spielman got there, I feel like I've seen him around a lot as well.
Well, you saw Spielman in your dorm room. And on your mom's answer machine.
Actually, I did. So I feel like they were around a lot. I've seen them a lot, you know, in the facility. Did I care? I don't really think I cared. Like, my main focus was to make sure I just did my job, so I wouldn't have to worry about who they
were. One of the.
It didn't really bother me none. It didn't really concern me about who the GM was.
I think towards the end here, at least the vibe that's given off, maybe it's more Zimmer or part Spielman. It seems like allegedly they kind of just walked around with their head down and, you know, just went about their business in a Parcellsian way. Was Spielman personable with you, Bryant? Like, you know, how's it going, buddy? Or was it all business?
He came from like Miami or something like this. So I think he felt like that was our connection. Okay. So yeah, he definitely spoke. When we seen each other, he always spoke and everything, and you know, had a little small talk, whatever. So he, for me, I feel like in that time period, he was a little more personable.
Okay. Sally, on the general manager topic, it's kind of, I've been asked this in a lot of Twitter messages, like, who do I want? And I'm kind of like, well, they really don't have track records. It's kind of just drawn out of a hat and hope, like John said, you get a cool guy from the Colts who built a real stable organization. Not the last 2 weeks, but in general. Sally, do you have like a dark horse candidate or anything? Or are you just, you know, kind of going with the vibe?
I really don't. I'm not an elite NFL office mind, so I'm not going to, you know, get too high or too low on anybody. I think, you know, just like John said, it makes me feel really good about the process that the Wolves are very dedicated to finding the right guy. It's obvious that they want someone who's going to be with them for another 16 or more years. And I think, I mean, there's going to be a lot of people out there that are qualified. It's not going to make me nervous or uneasy if some of those bigger names that are being talked about right now get taken, because I know that they're going to find somebody that is a good fit for the culture and what they're trying to implement going forward. So I'm just nervous about the unknown, not who it's going to be necessarily.
Fair enough. Ron, we've talked since we started to see the writing on the wall, the kind of the slow march to Zimmer's termination, which I felt in my bones started to become real when they lost to the Cowboys. I realized on that night on my 4-hour drive home that this team ain't it. I had my expectations too high.
Finally.
Yep. Yep. No. And then Danielle Hunter was hurt. And I was like, well, that's going to be for the year, no matter what happens. And it was. So I realized in that moment, this is probably the end of the Zimmer era. And that's how I started to write on VikingsTerritory.com that I was like, kind of, we're in a slow march now. And indeed it was. So, and you and I and Sally, we've talked ad nauseum about potential coach candidates. So we know kind of who you want, an offensive dude, preferably. But now that Zimmer's officially gone and Spielman won't be choosing, you know, the man or woman as the next head coach, do you predict formally that it will be a offensive thinker, or do you think that Wolves don't necessarily feel that way? It'll probably be a nice guy, you know, if they swing the pendulum the other way.
Yeah. Honestly, I have no clue which way they're going to go, because it seems like while it's not a package deal, GM and coach, it's going to be a collaborative effort in getting the GM in place and getting a coach in place where they can be on the same page. Now, I don't know what that means. I don't know if it means, you know, quote unquote, a retread coach. I know the names are being thrown out there, the Doug Petersons, you know, Brian Flores, all these guys who either recently let go or have, you know, sat out a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And in my thinking, I'm not sure really what is the best way to go, because I, like Sally said, I have no idea what front offices look like as far as who those names are, other than what I read on various sites. So I'm not going to pretend to act like I know anything about what anyone else is doing outside of the Vikings front office. So until that's in place, I do like the aspect, you know, John alluded to it, the Wolves, from a fan standpoint, they do seem like an ownership group that would be a desirable, you know, boss to have. So I think, you know, in reading whether, you know, Chad Graff put out a great article about like the Vikings being probably the most desirable spot. And it's nice. I know they're obviously Vikings reporters, but you kind of hear that sentiment around the league as well, because whether New York and all these places that are looking, the stability is a big question mark. You know, when organizations go from GM to GM, I wouldn't want that if I'm looking for a new employer. So I think they're in a position where they can wait it out, at least to let kind of the cream rise to the top. But I also think the Wolves, they're expert business people. I mean, clearly. So I trust them to be able to make those decisions. But, you know, again, as a fan, I want them to trust who is in place, because I don't want it to be like where, when Zimmer hired DeFilippo as the offensive coordinator, where after a few games, yeah, we don't like this and we're going to throw something else at the wind. So I'll trust the process while it'll be agonizing, not knowing what's going to happen. You know, there's plenty of good coaching candidates out there, and, you know, look at Joe Judge getting released. And, you know, he was one of those top names of like when he got hired. And, you know, I feel like every name that gets hired is, well, that's the next great thing. But let's let the guys who know what they're doing. I can talk about it from a fan standpoint, but I'm not even going to pretend to get inside the Wolf's mind or try to give my opinion one way or another when I honestly don't know.
On the desirability of a job, I think from a roster standpoint, the Broncos are more desirable Because I think they're going to be guns a blazing. Peyton is for a stable quarterback, whether it's Matt Ryan or Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, blah, blah, blah. But then I think I commented something on social media about that, and Matt Anderson brought me back to earth. I forgot that the ownership is so in flux with Denver. So that might not be ideal. And it's the inverse with the Wolves. It's pretty much, you know, laissez-faire, do what you want. And that's like a dream for an executive. So, John, if indeed the Vikings hire a coach with previous experience, whether it's Peterson or Flores, that'd be the first time the Wolves do so. Do you think that they would give that a shot or continue on the coordinator bus? Or is it impossible to say without the identity of the general manager?
Yeah, I do think like what Mark Wolf said earlier this week was that, you know, they're going to hire a GM first and then hire the coach. And so it really does depend on who they hire as a GM in terms of what the available name is going to be for a head coach, because I do think that once they hire that GM, whoever they hire is already going to tell them, I think I can get coach X or coach Y. It's not going to be, well, I got to interview 15 people. It's like, here's who I have. And they're going to either give that the thumbs up or the thumbs down. I mean, I do think, though, that a guy like Doug Peterson, I think he is a guy who's pretty high on the list of preferences in terms of has an innovative kind of offensive approach. I think his demeanor is certainly a lot different than Mike Zimmer. And so if it would not surprise me if whoever is hired as the GM maybe comes in saying, I can get either, whether it is Doug Peterson or someone else who they prefer as a coach, and say that that's the way that I'm going to roll with it. But it, you know, I'm not a betting man. I'm terrible at doing this, this kind of forecasting and stuff. But if I were to place money down, I think Doug Peterson would be the where I would put my money right now to see that who ends up on the sideline.
Okay. I got to ask you, you said 20 years you've been doing this. In these interviews, maybe you don't know, but I'm going to try here. Will they point blank say to the man or woman, what was your opinion of Kirk Cousins? What are you going to do if you get in here?
Yes.
Will they be that direct in the interview?
100%. And if they don't, that's malpractice. Like, okay. Yeah. There's no possible way that cannot be like one of the major, major points of discussion with any general manager candidate is, what would you do? And maybe it's not necessarily that they have decided we have to move on from him. You have to trade him or anything like that. But whoever they have to hire has to have a plan of how to go forward at quarterback. And it could be, hey, we're going to keep Kirk Cousins, and I'm going to make these changes to the offensive line. I'm going to make these changes schematically, and we're going to do, you know, that we're going to roll with it that way. I would say, because Mark Wilf said this week that he doesn't want to do a full rebuild, like a teardown and rebuild, I would think, you know, maybe a lot of Vikings fans don't want to hear this, I would think there's a chance, a greater chance that Cousins is back because of that. If you don't want to tear down and kind of start over, and, you know, and trade Cousins and get some picks and then eventually get some cap relief and then hopefully go into 2023 draft, you know, in the top five or six and go after a stud quarterback. Well, then, you know, I mean, is Gardner Minshew your guy? Like, are you going to go find someone like that and try and make it work? I don't know, but absolutely one of the most important discussions that they're going to have with any of these guys is, what in the heck are you going to do at quarterback, and how is that going to help us next year and then going forward for the next 3 or 4 years? Otherwise, why are you even having a search like this?
Okay.
I think one of the things too, where I think we as fans kind of always forget it's a job interview for everyone as well. So if, like, for one, they have to want the job. So while they might, like, you know, Lewis Riddick, for example, may be interviewing for a lot of places, he has to find the place that's best for him. And he has to have the plan for each individual spot, what it is, just like as we interview for jobs, what we're looking for. So I think that gets lost in the shuffle a lot. But also, from the ownership standpoint, as they're conducting these interviews, and this, John, this question is specifically for you and your experience, do sometimes they ask these questions and meet with these individuals who have had these positions in the past to kind of calibrate their own thinking, like to kind of just like, hey, we're going to get as many qualified candidates in here, basically to see what it is that we actually want? Or do they you know, like Doug Peterson, you know, Super Bowl winning coach, is that like, you know, we view him as maybe a potential front runner, but would they just want to meet with them because, well, what are your thoughts on this organization, where they're at, and how you we mean, can like, move pick it forward? Their brain? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like, yeah, and yeah. kind of figure out which direction they want to go based on other people's or outside opinions.
Like a teacher when they told you to use the test for answers.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I think absolutely, Ron. Like, especially with this group that's going to be leading the search. Andrew Miller is a new CEO. He's only been here a few years. He came from baseball. I think he's a really knowledgeable guy, but he's not like one of those guys who's been in the NFL for 20 years. And so I do think that part of this process for them will not only be interviewing their candidates on, hey, what would you do? But there, I think the question will also be asked, hey, what do you think of the Vikings? When you look at, you know, who we are and what we've accomplished and what we have, like, what are your unvarnished thoughts? And so they will take that feedback and they should take it and really look inward with, and maybe there's going to be some guys who say, oh, this is a fantastic situation, and blow sunshine up their ass a little bit and like try and get it that way. But you hope to find a couple of candidates who say, you know what, you really messed up here, or, you know, this is a problem that needs to be addressed. And if you don't, you're not going to be going anywhere. And I think that that will help educate them on who the right person is, but also who, also what issues they have to address that maybe they aren't even giving, you know, the right priority to all of that. So there will definitely be another layer to this search that is kind of a self scout and just a look in the mirror time for them too. Yeah.
Bryant, let's get wacky for a second. You're 42 years old. You're still playing left tackle for the Vikings. You're like the Andrew Whitworth. And your hard-nosed defensive disciplinarian coach has just been terminated, and you play offense. You want to get on this trend of seeing a young, energetic dude, you know, who knows offense like the back of his hand, or don't you really care? Do you just want the best leader of men?
I probably want somebody. I'm on offense, so I probably would want somebody on the offensive side to, help make sure that we are getting, you know, things together on that side, and you know, energetic, bring some new, fresh energy here. And get everybody, you know, to buy into the system and try to rally around that.
Okay, so that would be what you described is the anti-Zimmer. It's an offensive
anti-Childress also.
yeah, it's more Tysian than anything, and it doesn't surprise me because that's your favorite coach. So cool. All right, so that's our segue. The Cousins topic, because that has drastically changed, Sally, since we last talked. Because I think if we would have, you know, done a straw poll, we would have bet Spielman stays within the organization. And since he made the transaction to get Cousins, he probably still believes in him and wants to ride this thing out for a year or two more. That's completely in flux now. So all the rumors we heard about Cousins of the Saints, the Broncos, blah, 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 Steelers, they're probably in play. So I know that you think that Cousins can be an apt passer when he has an offensive line that's worth the damn. Lo and behold, we have not. So what is your temperature right now? Do you want to try it if you can be assured that the offensive line will look sexier, or are you going to do the patch over dude and the rookie and blah, blah, blah?
Well, that's the thing, Dustin. What signs do we have that this offensive line is going to get any sexier ever, especially in the next
three years? There's got to be a human that knows football better than me that works for them and says, yes, like, oh yeah, well, look at this. Yeah, this, I know what's wrong here because I can do it. They want to call me, I'll do it.
There's no longer the coaching hard-ons for Dakota Dozier and Ole Udo to continue to get reps over a potential promising rookie.
So I guess what I'm saying, there can't be somebody this stupid who doesn't realize this. I'm going to say, I'm hoping the Wilf say, yeah, the other guy, would love him to death, but he didn't get the offensive line. I'm hoping that the guy's like, yeah, we'll go out and get Brandon Scherff. This is simple. So assuming that it gets to subpar offensive line pass protection, they're pretty decent run blocking. Do you want to see Cousins again, or would you rather scrap it and, you know, have Peterson or Bieniemy do the thing without Cousins?
I just don't know how realistic it is in 1 year to fix an offensive line to the caliber that Cousins needs it to be successful. I just don't see how in one season you're going to make a tremendous difference at offensive line. I don't. So for me, I mean, while there are definitely benefits in keeping him, gun to my head, I would just rather move on. I don't think that this experiment has been successful enough in 4 years. And I think it would take them at least 2 years to make big changes to the offensive line. So I would rather them not extend him and go down that road and tie up a bunch of money, because there's a lot of areas of need here. I would like to know John's opinion, though, in how likely it is that the Wilfs would even have that stipulation when hiring someone of no, you can't touch Cousins' contract, or anybody for that matter, because I would feel like that you're kind of tying someone's hands behind their back before they even get started if they don't have the flexibility to make decisions like that.
Yeah, I don't, Sally, I don't think that there's going to be preconditions at all, you know, from the Wilfs on that. I don't think that they're going to go into it and say, the only person we're going to hire is definitely going to keep Kirk Cousins and go this way. I think that what they're going to do is interview a bunch of different people and probably hear 2, 3, 4 different plans and like see which one makes the most sense to them. If it comes out to it, if, you know, like I personally think that there is a real case to be made to say, look, guys, with where we're at and the talent that we have and the age of some of these guys and everything, maybe the best thing to do is take a step back in 2022 and, you know, have one difficult season and then try and, you know, come back in with picks, you know, at the top of each round instead of, you know, in the middle to the bottom. Because the one of the things that's been very admirable about Spielman and Zimmer is they've never been terrible. Like they've been consistently competent the whole way through. And so that's an admirable thing. Ask the Jets, ask, you know, a lot of these teams that have struggled for a long, long time. The Bills are just coming out of it and stuff. But the problem is that when you are that competent, you're picking right in the middle and you're not getting the swings at the super premium guys. And so, you know, I think that an inventive pitch to the Wilfs will be, hey, we're going to come in and we think the one thing to do is what, you know, is do a Brock Osweiler type deal where we're going to attach a little something to Kirk Cousins, move him away. We're going to start some journeyman in 2022. And then, or maybe even just give it to Kellen Mond for a year and see what you have. And then probably lose a bunch of games, but then come back with some cap space, come back with some high draft picks and really start rolling in 23. I think there's a good case to be made there. Whether the Wilfs have the stomach for that and want to do that, I'm not sure. It doesn't sound like they do, but I do think that they will at least consider all the angles when they're interviewing these guys.
And you mentioned Brock Brock Osweiler, and like I would have to imagine that if they did do something to unload Kirk, they're not going to have to attach a whole lot of capital to that because it is a 1 year deal, whereas Osweiler still had 3, 4 years or so on that.
Right, and also Kirk is still a really good quarterback. So in the right system, you can sell like to Pittsburgh. You could sell if assuming Ben is retiring, you could sell to Denver, like George Payton. Like if he can't get Aaron Rodgers, if he can't get Russell Wilson, if he strikes out on a few of those others, like Cousins could come in and raise the floor of any team by a sizable margin. The thing with Osweiler, that why they had to attach such big sweeteners, is that he just wasn't very good. Yeah. And so, so there is that. Now, yeah, again, you have to take the big cap hit when you make that deal. But it is something that they should at least consider. And there very well could be some really good ideas to hold down the fort and to keep Kirk Cousins and to be productive. Because the other thing that we haven't really talked about yet, guys, is that what if whoever is the new coach, whether it's Doug Peterson, Bieniemy, Dabble, whoever you want to say, what if they just come in with either themselves or with an offensive coordinator that isn't a first time play caller, son of a guy. Like, do you think that might work once? Like, is that something to explore at all? Like, and so like, it's possible that somebody might come in where the head coach doesn't have their thumb on the scale and say, you better run it this many times or else I'm going to be jumping your ass. Like, and maybe Kirk thrives in a situation like that. Maybe you add one offensive lineman and in a different system, it can be more productive that way. You still have great, great skill position players. Irv Smith's going to come back next year. Like, you have Thielen, you have Jefferson, you have Smith Marset looked really good coming in, KJ Osborne, Dalvin Cook. Like, you have things to work with. So maybe there is some system fit issues that could come in and solve a lot of these problems as well.
And I think that part, like to Sally's point with fixing an offensive line in one offseason, that could be part of it. The play calling, I feel like, didn't do any favors. It goes back to the Norv Turner days where we had no offensive line, but he wanted to do 7-step drops every single time. And so I think the talent is there. Like, you know, obviously O'Neal's a staple. Ezra Cleveland, I thought, showed a lot of promise, and then Darisaw after he got healthy. So I think you have three key pieces. You know, now whether Bradbury and you know, the right guard spot, however that works out. But I think if you got 60% of your line squared away and they're, you know, young but talented, I think that is a good spot to be in, you know, at least looking at it from the outside. But then also, again, Sally's point, with like the coaches coming in or and looking at it, and if they want to trade Cousins or, you know, whatever they want to do, the way I see it, the Vikings have kind of two ways to go about it. Either someone comes in like, look, I don't want to be attached to a Daniel Jones or, you know, a Tua and have my future based on the unknown. Like, look, we have a guy who's in his early 30s who can play. Let's fix it around it, at least get us to a point where we can then develop a young guy. That's one way. But then another way, you mentioned Ben Roethlisberger. The Vikings may also be in a situation where they can leverage the two AFC North teams, because Stefanski, I'm sure, if they had Kirk Cousins, they might be a Super Bowl favorites with that offensive line and running game. And if you then tell them that, well, we're going to trade Kirk to Pittsburgh, there could be some internal fighting going on as far as, you know, who wants them more. So, which again, I'm on the keep Kirk train, but if that happens, I wouldn't be too upset.
John,
yeah,
what do you?
It's go a ahead. Good idea. Go ahead.
What do you say to a guy like myself or Ron, who we have scars on our body from the pre-Cousins era and the pre-Dante era?
I do too.
No. Here's where I'm going with this. The Vikings do not do quarterback continuity. You say, we're going to try Gus Frerotte. Hey, and then we're going to draft Terrace Jackson. Didn't work out. Yay. And then you catch lightning in a bottle once in a while. And then you finally find a dude who, like a religion, throws 4,000 yards and 30 touchdowns. And some of us fans, we assume that we're going to go find the other guy to do that. What do you say to a guy like myself that says, like, for once we have the continuity, the production, and now we want to go back into the great unknown and hope we do things right and get the right patch over guy? Do you think that is worth the risk to go find our Mahomes or what have you?
Well, I do think that it's definitely a risk. Like, let's put that out there. It's a risk to fire Mike Zimmer. It's a risk to fire Rick Spielman, two guys who were competent at their jobs and had the team in a position every year where they're at least in that 8-9 win range. And so there is always a chance that the next GM could be Dave Gettleman. There's always a chance that the next coach could be Joe Judge or Urban Meyer, you know, and just flame out and really set you back. There's a chance that you move on from Kirk Cousins and go draft the next Christian Ponder, you know, like that. That is absolutely something to consider. I think that some fans just kind of get all swept up in it, change for change's sake. And as long as we get rid of these guys, automatically the next person that comes in is going to be an upgrade. And that often is not the case. So yeah, there is risk that is involved in this, but I do think that if you are of the mind that you're kind of tired of being in the middle, that you just are worn out by 8-9 now, you know, 10 wins and getting blown out in the playoffs. And you know that you're just not good enough. Like, let's face it, like, this team has just not been good enough for the last 4 or 5 years, that it's probably worth taking this swing, right? Mm-hmm. Both from the leadership, front office, and coach. And then if you decide to move on from Kirk Cousins, it might be worth just taking the swing, because you kind of know what you have with all of those guys and you know how far you could get. And so, yeah, you might fall back, but there's also a chance that you find the next, maybe it's Mac Jones, maybe it's Lamar Jackson, maybe it's, mm-hmm. you know, it's somebody like that who comes in and really galvanizes. Maybe it is Mahomes or something like that and galvanizes. And can you imagine, like, the Viking faithful, if you ever landed on something like that with, like you said, all the scars that you all carry, mm-hmm. like all of that struggle and all that suffering, that if you actually got that, like, you remember the Favre year, like how mm-hmm. fun that was.
Absolutely.
And so, like, I do think that you think about that and you say, all right, you know, we've done the 9-7, we've done 10-6, we've done, you know, even the 13 wins, but then getting thumped, like, is it time to try and really go for it? And I think that's what they're trying to do here. Whether it works out or not, I don't know, but I just get the sense that people are ready to take that risk right now.
It hit a boiling point or inflection point for me after that aforementioned Cowboys loss, when Chris Carter tweeted, we're so content with mediocrity, it sucks.
Yeah.
And that is my, you know, if I'm ranking my favorites, Chris Carter is my second favorite behind Bryant McKinney of all time. And so, Brian, I want to ask you, I think I've heard your answer before, because out of all the cool guests that you've brought on, you know, from Warren Sapp to Devin Hester, I tried to wiggle in their opinion of Cousins because it's a hot button issue. And unsurprisingly, the responses were mixed. So how much, now that, you know, you've left the game, but, you know, you still follow it pretty intently, especially on the Miami side, how accountable for a franchise and for wins now is a quarterback? You know, is it, do you perceive it through a lens of quarterback wins, or do you still have the team aspect, because, you know, you were the left tackle? Because I think we've been taken into quarterbacks like it's tennis, wins and losses. And I want to know if you share that vibe.
Just being around some quarterbacks can really control the game. They know how to control the clock. They know how to win a football game. If you really look at, like, Tom Brady, he can leave from New England to go to Tampa and kind of almost in a GM sense, you know, tell them what he requires to win, wins the Super Bowl. So a quarterback, if they're vocal and, you know, believe in themselves, because, like, I also played with Ryan Tannehill in his Miami days, and he was more or less following instructions, basically what they told him to do, and didn't really play. He's now, I can tell he's playing and using mm-hmm. his athletic ability, where there it was, I'm just going to do what they say because I don't want to be in the meeting room later on and they're yelling at me about, you know, just doing, you know, just using my athletic ability sometimes. So it really depends on the player. You have some players who, like, what I'm going to say, Brett Favre, when he came, he just was like, this is what I do. And everybody's going to buy into what I do. And, I mean, him and Chili had words at times, and it just is what it is. He knew how to win games still, too. He knew how to pull them out. So it really depends on the individual.
I think with Cousins and Zimmer, like, it's either a mixture, or either Zimmer was so much of a prick that Cousins couldn't even really do anything or command the offense, mm-hmm. or Cousins doesn't have that voice. And it's probably a mixture of both, because
that's the big thing, is that, like, you have to have that voice. When you have that voice and that confidence, the rest of your team is going to have confidence in you too.
Yeah. There was I don't remember the game. Was it against the Lions? There was a game, a home game, where we found out that Cousins wasn't allowed to call timeouts. And, you know, we were like, Jesus, like, you know, like, really, this guy is, you know, making this much money and he can't call a simple timeout. And I think that was another point where we're like, my goodness, this guy does rule the roost, Zimmer I'm speaking of. So, on the topic of wholesale change, I think, Sally, I think right now it's clear and evident that Anthony Barr will not return, even though he had a year that had some spectacular plays that were later squandered. So I think we can check him off the way that he's speaking, as he's gone. But Sally, who do you think played their last game for the Vikings against the Bears there?
Oh, gosh.
There'll be a bunch of them with these one-year deals.
Put me on the spot. I mean, obviously, Patrick Peterson, for sure.
You don't think he's back?
I don't think he's back. I mean, he's got a side gig with PS5s that he's got to worry about. No, I'm just kidding. But that obviously was unfortunate that he got hacked selling PS5s during the game. I don't think he'll be back. Gosh, who else is on a one-year deal?
Xavier Woods,
yeah.
I would like to see Xavier Woods back. I hope that they can figure that out. Because God, who's going to be in that secondary otherwise?
Maybe Hamilton.
Mackenzie Alexander, obviously, will be gone. I don't know.
It's the one-year deals, Ron. Who else? Maybe even surprising ones if this GM is going to start.
Well, I would say, too, it's either Irv Smith or Conklin. I don't see them keeping both.
No, Conklin is one I should have said at the opening of the segment here because, yeah, he'll get a nice little chunk of money because he's pretty good.
That one actually kind of scares me a little bit because, yes, the Irv Smith potential is there. We've all seen it. But Tyler Conklin came in and he played phenomenal. He did everything you needed. And are we, again, not disparaging Irv Smith at all, but are we sure that Irv Smith is better than Conklin at this point?
No.
That's the one thing that he is. He's got the speed, but I feel like whenever Conklin was put in a spot to ask to do something, he excelled at it. So, but the one that I think that could be a surprise, and it's just because of availability, Michael Pierce. You can't pay a big free agent acquisition that much and have him miss so much time. While he, when he's on the field,
76% of Vikings games he missed.
When he's on the field, he's one of the best nose tackles in the game. The numbers don't lie on that. So, although some people still think stats are what was the word that Sage Rosenfels used?
They both use the word lie.
I thought that was funny, but
Michael Pierce, refresh my memory, does that COVID year that he took off last year just take a year off his contract, or is that just a voided year with an extended year?
It was added on from what I remember, like, you know, we get an extra year of him. Okay. But in our minds, you know, because he didn't play, he was signed, supposed to be the big Linval replacement, right? And he's been on the field 24% of the time. I mean, we're not knocking him. It's just the way it worked.
Yeah. So I think that would be the big one that stands out to me. But I do want to take one step back, back to Kirk, as we were talking about it, because one of the things that I was thinking about is, and I'm not saying it's going to have the same success, but when Andy Reid took over as the Kansas City coach, he traded for Alex Smith, and Alex Smith, like the way they utilized him, I can see Kirk or a new regime kind of doing that model of, hey, we're going to roll with Kirk, but then maybe draft and develop like they did with Mahomes. And now, again, the results will be what they are when it happens, or if and when it happens. But I think that could be for those people who aren't on the Kirk train, because we've discussed this in the past. He's not going to be back at the $45 million cap hit. Like, that's just not going to happen. It's either going to be a trade or a restructure. But I think that's something that if I were someone who disliked Kirk, like, think about it that way, that you can still identify and draft someone while you have stability at the position and then set yourself up that way. Don't be like the Seahawks and throw a bunch of money at Matt Flynn after one game and then draft Russell Wilson and then cut Matt Flynn. So, cause either way, a bridge quarterback is going to cost you $15 million, on a free agent deal anyways. So just again, the step, but otherwise Kirk is obviously another one who could potentially play his last game.
John, who else is out off that list? Should we get them all?
You know, I think those are probably the major ones. I mean, maybe, you know, is Bradbury, like, will a new GM come in and just say, hey, look, this isn't it. Like, I'm going to bring my own guy in.
He's a fabulous receiver, sir.
Yeah, exactly.
Conklin replacement.
Make him the tight end. If Conklin is gone, make him the backup tight end. You know, somebody like, I could see, like, a lot of times when a new GM comes in and they're not as beholden to their draft picks and things, are not as invested in that, it's a lot easier for them to say, hey, Garrett Bradbury, you're not good enough. I can find another center in the fourth round or the fifth round and plug them in. So, so that might be another name that I would add, to the list, but I think otherwise, you know, of the notable ones, that sounds like we covered it pretty well.
What's Madison's deal?
That's a good question. I'm not sure. I don't think he's up.
He's got one more year.
Yep.
He might have one more year, but 19, then, you know,
20, 21. Yep. One more.
Well, let's trade him.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, if you're looking for assets like that, that would actually entice other teams. Maybe, you know, maybe someone like him would, because you have, you know, Wang Wu behind him. And I mean, he's an interesting guy. Like
all pro,
I've said it before, yeah. Like he should have had the Cordarrelle Patterson rule. Like, do not ever take a touchback. Like take
especially
it out
against
every time.
Green Bay.
Like
your quarterback's not doing anything.
Yeah, exactly. Like I don't understand why they were more aggressive with him doing that. But yeah, there. I mean, there could be little or smaller moves like that. But I mean, you know, I think they have a lot of the guys will come back, and I mean, their core players probably, you know, most if not all of them will be back, and then it's just about finding role players around them to better fit what they have.
Some depth, some much needed depth. Yeah, and that's all pro Kanae Nwangwu and all pro Eric Kendricks with a surprisingly subpar 60 PFF grade, got an all pro nod, but we'll take it. Kind of a Xavier Rhodes treatment from 2019.
Yeah, how about Jefferson getting snubbed?
They put Chase over him. They preferred Chase's three touchdowns. Like three additional touchdowns.
Chase had four good games and 12 average ones. And I don't understand.
Yeah, he wasn't very happy about it with his tweet.
No.
All right, Sally, what do you got for us tonight? Take us away.
Well, I feel like we should keep going with these hot button topics, but I guess I'm wondering if John has any more spicy stories about BMAC in the locker room.
Oh, there's some stories that have circulated around. I don't know if the public sharing of them is wise of me to do right now, but I will say that Tom West, who BMAC knows very well, and I swap stories all the time about him, because we just always would, whenever we talk about it, we get smiles on our faces, because I mean, just a huge, huge dude, but who always had a smile on his face and was always kind of just quietly having fun. And we enjoyed being around him. And we've heard, you know, the stories of confrontations and things that would happen in locker rooms and stuff like that. And we always kind of one on the tough days on the beat and stuff, when we need a little break, you know, he and I will kick back and say, hey, you remember when Brian did this, or do you remember when Big Phil did that or something? And it was a good era to have around. I remember one time when it was a preseason training camp practice, something like that. But real recently, this was kind of in the early days of TMZ. It kind of came out that BMAC had his way with Shannon Briggs outside a club one time. And
we talked about
Ed
Reed.
Yeah. And I came up and I asked him about it, just walking off the field. And I'm just saying like, hey, you know, you're going to go for the title now. And Brian just laughed and thought it was funny. But like all of my other writer friends and journalist friends looked at me and like, how could you ask him that? Wouldn't you get mad? I'm like, no, it's BMAC. He's not going to admit that. He's going to have fun with it. So that's the kind of, you know, that I always appreciated, you know, being able to laugh and joke and not take things too seriously with him. So
Nate Burleson was on like last summer sometime, and he said McKinney's like the Suge Knight, like just organizes everyone, friends with everyone in the lot. Like, yeah. Just the gentle giant, and like you've said it right, always has a smile on his face. But I don't know about the everything is always quietly having fun, because sometimes there's some loud fun going on too.
Oh yeah, trust me. No, absolutely.
Usually on a body of water. hey John, I wanted to ask you before we part ways for the night. Was it fun to cover Zimmer and his Parcells-ish ways in press conferences, or was that like, oh, we got to go talk to him now?
I enjoyed it because especially the post game press conferences, because I think as a writer, the frustrations that you have is when someone toes the line and when someone holds back their feelings. And Zim never did that. Now,
not particularly.
There were plenty of times where I disagreed with him.
Yeah.
Where I didn't, you know, I like, what is he talking about? That sort of thing. But at least I always knew as a writer where he stood. and there was no politics. There was no, no lying, no subterfuge, no, none of that, no tap dancing with him. He laid it all out there. Now, there were times where he really crossed the line. I thought the Kellen Mond thing was ridiculous. Like, you just can't say it. You can't say that about a player publicly, especially a young one, and expect to not have any blowback. So I thought that there were times where he went way too far. But at least, again, like, as to get material, to understand the subjects that you're covering, you never had any guesses about what was on his mind or the way he thought. And so that way I always very much appreciated it, for sure.
Okay. Wonderful.
Plus a post game, anytime Chris Thomason is there, you know, something juicy is going to go down.
Well, and that's the one thing, like, I would say, like, if I were to critique Zimmer, it's clear that he obviously did not like Thomason at all. Now, I've had these situations too, where maybe I didn't get along with the head coach I covered or something like that. And I think, like, the head coach, when he snaps at a reporter, like, really feels like, yeah, I'm going to get him, or I'm going to show this guy. And what they don't understand sometimes is they often end up just looking bad themselves. Like, and I think that, you know, even if some people didn't like the way that Thomason did his business or anything like that, you know, when fans see that and watch it in the press conference, some of them, I'm sure, are looking at that and saying, man, what's this guy doing? Why is he being such a dick? And that only hurts Zimmer. Like, that doesn't hurt Thomason. Like, nobody gives, whatever about him and about his whole thing. So, like,
yeah, Thomason doesn't even care.
No,
he's asking questions. We all want to know answers to.
God bless him. He just, like, goes at it. He does not care at all. There's no bedside manner with him. There's none of it. And that's fine. Like, I have respect for that. But coaches sometimes think that the only people watching the interaction are those people in the room. And when fans watch it around and kind of pick up on it, there can be this kind of conveying a not having control of the situation. And sometimes that doesn't work in their favor.
Especially because you never really see the guy who's asking it. So it's like he's like being Charlie mean Brown's to the parents. Camera. Yeah, he's being you're being rude to this anonymous guy on the camera. So I'm with
you.
Exactly. All right. Well, listen, John, we are out of time. We appreciate you going the distance. It would be cool if Sally could hook you up maybe around draft time or something like that, because you were extremely insightful, sir.
Oh, I appreciate having me. It's great to see you all. Always great to see Bryant as well. And so I'd love to come back anytime.
Oh, excellent. All right. Well, we'll be back next week, maybe with the general manager. Probably not, but we'll break it all down. And again, John, thanks for joining us.
You got it.
Thanks, John.
All right. Yeah, take it easy, you guys.
Bye, Bryant.
Later, Bryant.
Have a good one.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.